It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Good evening and welcome to our program. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving time with your family. Of course, our prayers go to the families who did not have a wonderful time, anything but families that instead had to experience a tragedy, the horrific, barbaric, point-blank range shooting of two National Guard soldiers in Washington, D.C. I can't even imagine what those families are going through, but we can see the courage and sacrifice of our military. And speaking of the military, the country's been speaking a lot about that lately. We're still in the aftermath of that video made by senators and congressmen who each had either a military or CIA background. I played the clip on last week's show. I won't play it tonight because, frankly, I don't want to hear it again. Instead, let me just quickly review, although the review's probably unnecessary. It's been huge in the news. They reminded members of the military that they have an obligation to refuse illegal orders from President Trump, but they never mentioned exactly what the illegal orders were. When interviewed, they were unable to name any actual specific illegal orders from the president, and instead insisted that they were concerned about things he had said in the past, which prompted them to make sure our soldiers understand their duty in the event that sometime in the future he might give an illegal order. None of them acquitted themselves well in these interviews, but I guess the person that gets the award is Senator Elisa Slotnick. She used a few good men with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise as an illustration of a time when people in the military carried out an illegal order. A few good men. Great movie. Great actors. Idiotic comment by a sitting senator of all people. Naturally, Trump gave his own comment, his own response. He put this out over Truth Social. It's called seditious behavior at the highest level. Each one of these traitors to our country should be arrested and put on trial. Huge capital letters in a lot of these places. Their words cannot be allowed to stand. We won't have a country anymore. An example must be set. At one point, the president posted, "Hang them." George Washington would. Yes, Trump makes those kinds of comments. He talks off the cuff. He talks without a filter. But the only action that's being taken is that the participants of the video are being investigated. Now, it's no surprise that President Trump reacted this way. Those who made the video, despicable as they may be, are not stupid. Slotkin's movie example notwithstanding, they're not stupid. They knew the president would react that way. They may not have predicted his exact words, but they knew he would say something inflammatory. Anybody could have predicted that. This is President Trump, after all. So if they made the video knowing that they would get that kind of response, I am forced to speculate that they wanted that kind of response, that that kind of response was convenient for them, that they knew the media would pick up on Trump's response and his words, that it would change the narrative, that the country would be commenting on the inappropriate response of the president. Now, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth also commented. He says, "The video made by the seditious six was despicable, reckless, and false. Encouraging our warriors to ignore the orders of their commanders undermines every aspect of good order and discipline. Their foolish seed sows doubt and confusion, which only puts our warriors in danger. Kelly's conduct brings discredit upon the armed forces and will be addressed appropriately." Now, you're wondering, why was Kelly singled out when there were six of them? Hegseth explained that. Five of the six veteran Democrats in the video don't fall under the Department of War's jurisdiction, including Senator Lisa Slotnick, who was in the CIA, and the other four, who, while in the military, are not retired like Kelly. I guess technically, if you've retired from the military as a career, then the military can call you back, which means they can call you back to a tribunal. Kelly has since given his own response. He says, if this is meant to intimidate me and other members of Congress from doing our jobs and holding this administration accountable, it won't work. I've given too much to this country to be silenced by bullies who care more about their own power than protecting the Constitution. Yeah, we know, Kelly. And we saw the medals that you put out. Like I said last week, I honor your service, but that doesn't automatically end the conversation. But he's not backing down. Brave, brave words. And hold on to your seats. He actually confronted Trump on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Talk about standing firm in the lion's den. Gutsy move in front of that audience. All right, now there's a lot of discussion this week, and I've seen lawyers brought on TV. Can these congresspeople be prosecuted for this video? Should they be? Was this actual sedition? Last week, I said over the air that it borderlined on sedition. 1 week later, with a lot of time to think about it, I'm still unwilling at the moment to say more than that. Don't misunderstand me. I feel nothing but contempt for what these six people put out there. But here's the thing. They were extremely careful. They chose their words like politicians because they are politicians. The freedom to speak out, protected by our First Amendment, is the most sacred part of our Constitution. Yeah, there's such a thing as crossing the line. If they had actually been encouraging soldiers to disobey legal orders, that would have been crossing the line. But they made sure that instead they went as far as they possibly could, coming to a screeching halt about 1 inch before the line. They were very careful that every I was dotted and every T was crossed. They did not, in so many words, encourage soldiers to disobey the president. Not if the words are parsed. They were clear that this was to be the case only if an order is illegal. So I don't believe any attempt to prosecute them will hold up in a court of law, not even a military court of law. Having said that, let's put the legal matter aside and just comment on the ethics. Judging the morality of a public leader is not always the same as a legal judgment. Sometimes we have to leave the moral judgment to God, but we can still comment. And since commenting on the radio is what I do, I believe this video was strategic. I believe this video was devious. I believe it was deliberate, classic brainwashing strategy. Knowing that Trump would have an overreactive verbiage just played into their hands and boosted their narrative, it does sow doubt and discord in the minds of soldiers, causing them to second-guess every order now. You can't defend a nation that way. It's a surefire method of breaking everything down. Just ask Soros and Geppetto and all the other puppet masters behind the scenes trying to destroy our country. All we have to do is question the defense of these so-called seditious six. At no time did we claim that soldiers should disobey legal orders, only illegal orders. Yeah, we know. You told us. And soldiers already know that. It's made abundantly clear to them when they take their oath of office. So why did you need to rehash it? And why now, of all times? Why exactly was the video made? That's the question. Not what their actual words were literally and legally, but what was the purpose of this video? And why did they go out of their way to remind us of their own service to our country, including military service? Again, that does not sanction irresponsible words. But they obviously felt it gave them special credibility, and special credibility in the minds of young service officers who are going to be listening to hero veterans, seniors with military experience far beyond their own. And then they go on. They say, well, at no time did we claim that Trump had given out illegal orders. Yeah, all right. Well, then why was Trump even mentioned? You went out of your way to mention somebody who hadn't given illegal orders. Explain this. Why did you go out of your way to say he's turning the military on a civilian population? You did say that. That's not exactly the same as claiming he gave an illegal order, but it's a downright lie. If the military already understands that they must refuse illegal orders, why are you talking as if this video production was some brilliant new revelation about orders needing to be legal? And why wasn't this important reminder given before, when there really was an illegal order in our recent history? Why wasn't a video made regarding Biden's order for every military member to take the COVID vaccine or resign? Now, they also claim they know the kind of stress our military is under these days, and they said it in the context of Trump's usage of the military. But it just so happens that morale in the military and military recruitment has never been better. Recruitment's going through the roof. Well, if things are going well, then again, I have to wonder if that video was created to sow discord that hadn't really existed. Well, we just want the military to know we have their backs. Oh, yeah? You didn't have their backs when you defunded them for 2 months during the government shutdown, did you? Ladies and gentlemen, all signs point to a wink-wink, nod-nod, wait for Trump to give a bad order, anticipate it, and then take action when it finally happens. Knowing full well that Trump would respond with exaggerated hyperbole, that the media would pick up on that, just adds to their brainwashing strategy. This on the heels of a lying narrative that Trump, rather than targeting people in our country who are here illegally, is only interested in going after people of color. This was emphasized again at a press conference in California by the brilliant Congresswoman Maxine Waters. The woman is in her late 80s. Now, normally, I would say that doesn't matter. But if this recent popping off of the mouth doesn't convince you of our need for term limits, nothing will.
I am so pleased that Robert Garcia is here and the mayor is here. This is an important press conference that is being held to let you know what we're all doing, resisting this low-down, dirty, no-good, filthy president of the United States of America. Let me just say this. They are targeting our leadership, both in the Latino community and in the Black community. And while they're targeting them and following them, I'm on the street and I'm following ICE and I'm targeting ICE. And I went to the deportation center. If David Huerta is here, I came to see about you, David. I came to see about you. I came to see about you because we've got to let them know that they're not going to get away with this. We are documenting everything. We are resisting. And I want to tell you, you are seeing the biggest coming together of the Black and Brown community that we've seen in this city ever. We are organized. We are coalescing with each other. And we're going to fight together. And the question that you're asking, the protest must continue. You must not stop. I'm protesting. I've been to 11 of them. I stay on the street, in the alleys, wherever I need to be. We're not afraid, but we're smart. And as the mayor said, we're not going to let him trigger us into a confrontation because we know that he would love to have martial law. He's moving toward a civil law. We're not going to have it, but we're going to win. We're going to win in the final analysis because of the kind of leadership that we have with Garcia and the mayor and others.
Ah, shut up!
My friends, if Trump was a dictator, if Trump was a despot, Maxine Waters would be put in jail for a speech like this. She would not be free to open her big, stupid mouth and proclaim her pure idiocy. Unfortunately, that too is included in our First Amendment freedoms, and we are still living under the First Amendment. At the moment, don't forget the very people that are calling Trump a despot say that the First Amendment does not protect hate speech, and they, of course, define hate speech as any speech which disagrees with their liberal leftist agenda. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, hello, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was absolutely fantastic. I don't think I had a bad bit of food anywhere. And
do you have all the traditional stuff, the turkey?
Everything from top to bottom, and a traditional mac and cheese, of course. We always have to have mac and cheese.
Now, you know, I saw a thing. It seems to be, you're Gen X, right? You're not Gen X. Gen Z.
I would think I'm
Gen Z. Are you on the border?
I'm Gen Z. It would be the border of Gen Z or millennial.
I've heard that Gen Z is really into mac and cheese. I love mac and cheese, but I would never have thought of it as a Thanksgiving dinner. Boomers and Gen X have trouble wrapping their heads around macaroni and cheese for Thanksgiving, but our grandkids just love it. We don't do Thanksgiving without Dana making mac and cheese.
Now. Well, it is a very, very delicious side dish, along with a lot of other ones like stuffing and all that. So
now, I grew up with parents that had a very untraditional Thanksgiving. We had Hawaiian duck instead of turkey.
Ooh.
And instead of pumpkin pie, my mom made chocolate cream pie and this, it's like strawberry jello ice cream pie. You seldom hear about it, but it's absolutely delicious.
You got
As an adult, I learned how to make it myself, and I never make or cook anything. But even I decided I've got to make this pie just so I can eat it again.
Well, the chocolate cream pie, you got my ears.
Oh, yeah, and Marie Callender's makes the best you're ever going to get.
Oh, delicious, absolutely. So today, I wanted to step away from politics tonight, and let's go ahead and do a very special Christmas edition of Bible questions.
Okay, so, that sounds good.
Yeah, so one of the things I notice with the classic Jesus birth story is that the narratives seem to have two different sides of the stories. Now, many people will say, oh, it's a contradictory, but I know you're going to give me another answer that does not.
Well, you know I'm not going to believe that.
Yeah, of course. So Matthew, for example, gives us information about Joseph and including the story of the Magi from the East.
Yes.
And then Luke.
Matthew's version is a little more from Joseph's point of view. It starts when he finds out his wife's pregnant, or they're not married yet, they're betrothed, mm-hmm. but he tries to put her away. Luke starts with Mary and the Annunciation.
Right, it focuses more on Mary and maybe some various others. The ones I included were Elizabeth, Zacharias, the shepherds, Simeon, and Anna, just to name a few of those who are praised for the incarnation.
Yeah, there's actually a great deal more information that we get from Luke than from Matthew.
Right, right.
But I like the different perspectives, they're good.
Absolutely. So obviously there's five things that we can all agree on, both Luke and Matthew's story.
They were all printed on paper. That's one.
Yes, I was specifically saying Jesus was born of a virgin. Mary and Joseph lived in Nazareth, a town in Galilee. Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And then after Jesus, I should say 4 points. But yes, you could say the fifth point, they were all printed. The fourth one is after Jesus' birth, Mary and Joseph returned to Nazareth. So those are the 4 points both books absolutely agree upon in their stories.
Yes.
Now, the details that are kind of unique to each writer are this. One is that the Magi visited Jesus, and that's what Matthew says. Joseph and Mary flee to Egypt to escape Herod's cruelty. That's also in Matthew. Luke mentions that a group of shepherds visit Jesus in the manger. And then lastly, Joseph and Mary make a trip to the temple in Jerusalem in fulfillment of the law. And that's in Luke as well for that. So, of course, the question becomes now, do these stories have contradictory parts? Or is there missing parts? Or no, this is all...
There's no contradiction, no genuine one. There are two that people try to point to.
Right.
One of them, if we go to Luke, they mention the census that the Romans took under Governor Quirinius. Mm-hmm. But Josephus, the historian, mentions that the census was in, if I'm recalling correctly, something like 6 AD. And Herod died around 3 or 4 BC. And he's putting this, obviously, at the time of King Herod, if we put it together with Matthew. However, there's a famous archaeologist named Sir William Ramsay, who was a Bible skeptic, set out to disprove Luke, came to the conclusion that Luke was more accurate than any other classical historian, and he discovered that Quirinius had served twice, so it's not really a contradiction. The other one gets into the genealogies. In Matthew, we're told that Joseph, now of course Joseph's the adoptive father of Jesus because Jesus is the son of God. Mm-hmm. Joseph is the son of Jacob, according to Matthew. He's the son of Heli, according to Luke. Mm-hmm. So that's put out, if you go to atheists or anti-Christian websites, that's huge on there. And they think they've got us. Well, in those days, if you did not have a son, your son-in-law was given your inheritance. Mm-hmm. And your son-in-law would often get listed in the genealogy as your son. So when they say Joseph, the son of Heli, what they probably mean is the son-in-law of Heli. Well, what's interesting is we have another document we can look at today. It was oral in Jesus' day, but it's since been handed down and codified. Mm-hmm. As you know, the Jewish Talmud says many derogatory things about Jesus and Mary, but it does verify that they lived. And we as Christians don't like reading derogatory things, but sometimes strictly from a historian's point of view,
right,
we're grateful that these records existed. Because what's interesting is Mary is referred to in the Talmud as the daughter of Heli. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? So mm-hmm. It's not really a contradiction at all. Another thing, and I get into this in more detail when we'll probably be repeating some of my Christmas history radio shows over mm-hmm. the Christmas break, but Jesus had to be born of a virgin. It was predicted in the Old Testament. There were all these qualifications of the Messiah, and he had to be related to King David. He had to be a blood descendant of King David, and he had to inherit David's throne. Well, King David had hundreds of wives.
Right.
And therefore hundreds, if not thousands, of kids. And what's interesting is if you look at Joseph's lineage, which is listed in Matthew, Joseph is related to David through the kingly line.
Right.
Mary is also related to David, but not through the kingly line, which means Jesus is a blood descendant of David, but he's not a blood descendant through the kingly line, but he needs to inherit the kingly line. Well, that's a problem, because if you read the book of Jeremiah, one of the wicked kings that was ruling over Judea, who got conquered by the Babylonians, his name was King Jeconiah. Mm-hmm. He was so wicked, God said, write this man off as childless. None of his descendants will ever sit on the throne. That's known as the King Jeconiah curse. If Jesus had literally been related to David through the kingly line, the Jeconiah curse would disqualify him from ever taking the throne and ruling Israel as the Messiah. But here, the virgin birth works this out beautiful. He's related to David physically, but not through the kingly line. But because Joseph is his adopted father, he gets the inheritance of the kingly line. So all to say, miracle notwithstanding, Jesus had to be born of a virgin to be the Messiah.
It just all accumulates to one absolutely beautiful story and miracle for that matter, too.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah.
Now, going back to what you previous said, specifically about the census and maybe
yes.
the trip. According to critics, Luke, who says nothing about the flight to Egypt, indicates that Jesus was taken to Nazareth directly from the temple, and Matthew does not mention the temple observances at all. So,
okay, Matthew, now let me tell you, this is a statement that's very common in the field of archaeology, but mm-hmm. it can also apply to ancient history. The absence of evidence is not the same thing as evidence of absence. Just because somebody doesn't mention something, mm-hmm. you've heard me say this before. If Matthew and Luke 100% agreed with each other word for word, the skeptics would say these are not two sources. This was all one. The fact that they show different details and don't have all the exact same accounts shows that it's from more than one source. And historically, we want more than one source.
Right, exactly. And again, that's why Luke offers up the different point of views in his story.
Right.
Matthew focuses mostly on the Joseph side.
Right. But there's nothing in there that contradicts.
Right.
Matthew not mentioning that they went to the temple simply means Matthew didn't mention that they went to the temple.
Right.
Doesn't mean it didn't happen.
And besides, Luke never mentioned a time frame either with this trip, because a lot of people would say, well, that's from Egypt to there? That's such a long trip. That's a month worth.
Now, another thing I've heard of, they said, oh, this Herod, remember when Herod heard that this baby was going to be born that would be
king?
So he tried to wipe out all the children.
Yes.
They say there's no evidence of that in history. Well, first of all, Bethlehem in those days is considered a very insignificant little town. It's huge to us. We have Christmas carols about Bethlehem.
Yeah.
In those days, Bethlehem would have been like Gila Bend, Arizona. Nobody cared. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do have is all kinds of other history about the bloodthirsty things of Herod. He not only killed people, he killed people in his own families. He was extremely paranoid. You'd have to wonder, why would some guy in his 70s be concerned that somebody just born was going to grow up to be king when obviously he wouldn't be alive anymore, even if he died of natural causes?
True.
Because the guy was absolutely off his rocker. And that's exactly the way history points Herod if we read the works of Josephus and other things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, coming up, I do have some more questions based on this, specifically about the time that Jesus was born specifically.
Okay.
So again, we'll talk about all that when we come back to the Bob Siegel Show.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
People are enjoying Bob Siegel's time travel novel, Push the Winds Around. Check out these customer reviews on Amazon.com. This is one of those books, like certain movies, where you keep thinking about it long after you finished. Once I picked it up, I didn't want to put it down until I'd read the entire book. Literally, a page-turner. Every character came to life. Their personalities were well-defined and consistent. First thing I did after I finished the book was to ask about the sequel. The next customer said, I read this book cover to cover in one sitting. Great read with completely unexpected ending that left me wishing there was just one more chapter. Give yourself a couple of hours to read it all at once because you won't want to put it down. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Run, run, Rudolph! Santa wants to make it in town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph! Reeling like a merry-go-round.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
So as we're talking about Jesus' birth, one of the things that seems to get brought up is, was Jesus actually born in December? There's a lot of people that will try to make context clues within the Bible to see if they can refute that point and make it sure that it was born in a different time. So one of the things I found interesting was some people were saying that he was actually born in September, and yet we are just celebrating this due to the fact that paganism.
I've heard September. Yeah. I've heard that he was really born in April. I've heard everything.
Yeah.
We don't know.
You're right.
Now, I did a debate with a guy one time out in Oregon, Willamette University in Salem. My opponent went on and on about how Jesus wasn't really born in December. Now, he didn't know that, but my response was kind of a so what. I said, the Bible says absolutely nothing about the date of Jesus' birth. It talks about details in the story of Jesus' birth.
Right.
I said, if you want to prove some date that he was born, it doesn't contradict the Bible because the Bible doesn't say anything.
Okay. Now, the only reason why I'm just pointing it out there is just a nitpick. Thing that people will talk about.
No, it's huge with people.
Yeah. So one of the things that many people will mention is the fact that Luke mentions that the shepherds in the fields are watching their flocks. They wouldn't be doing that during the midwinter season, apparently.
Well, except a winter in ancient Judea and Nazareth would be different than our winters. But sure, there are cold winters. There were also enclosures that sheep were put into. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really carry mustard. I don't care when Jesus was born. Now, I can tell you why we celebrated on the 25th.
Okay.
There was a Roman custom called the Festival of Saturnalia.
Yes.
It was this fascinating time of the year, and it lasted a long time, but the first day was the 25th of December. And it was a day when slaves and masters would actually trade places, and the slave could be the master, and the master would be the slave. I'm sure nobody abused the privilege because they knew they were going to switch back. Mm-hmm. But that was a festival, and they gave themselves all kinds of gifts, and they decorated trees, and they had wreaths. Well, when Rome became Christianized, under Constantine, they started replacing their pagan festivals for religious festivals.
Right.
So they changed Saturnalia to Christmas. Now, I've met a lot of Christians who take issue with that. They say, well, we shouldn't be celebrating Christmas because it was once a pagan holiday. And I say, look, if God can convert a soul, God can convert a holiday.
Right, right. Just don't go under the presence of Kirk Cameron, who says, oh, well, a Christmas tree is made out of wood. Christ died on the wood, so therefore.
That kind of apologetics we don't find particularly helpful.
No, it's, not at all. It just kind of hurts the religion.
Yeah,
the
when you're sure. given a bad argument for something that's true, it doesn't sound true anymore.
Exactly. One of the things I do want to mention is that even scientists prove the fact that the temperature during December was actually a pretty warm one for Bethlehem. They said it was actually in the low 40s to even high 50s.
And I'm not saying they never had their cold winters. I'm just saying we don't really know for sure. So it certainly could have been in December. I love celebrating it in December.
Me too.
I love the tradition. I don't care for the life of me what day he was really born.
No,
I still love Christmas.
I do want to point out some of the other ones because they are kind of interesting, to say the least, at least. Roman censuses would have had their census done during the fall season, they said. The cold temperatures and poor road conditions would be hard to make many citizens participate in the census.
But those censuses would have taken a long time, and people forget the high majority of the month of December actually is in the fall.
True, true. And again, the temperature reason too, for that matter as well. It's not too
they
cold.
They didn't have their census in one day. It would have taken a long time.
Exactly, exactly. One of the ones that is the most significant, actually, is depending on the timing of John the Baptist's birth here. I don't know if you're familiar with this point of view. The biblical facts lay in the groundwork.
This is the one Jim Barrier likes.
Yes, so John's father, Zechariah, was taking his turn to serve in the temple when the angel Gabriel appeared to him and announced that Elizabeth, Zechariah's wife, would conceive a son. And this was in Luke chapter 1, verses 8 through 13. After Zechariah returned home, his wife conceived, just as the angel had said. Gabriel then visited Mary to announce the miraculous conception of Jesus, and that this visit came in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. One last thing to mention too is that Zechariah belonged to the priestly division of, I'm going to mispronounce this, Abijah. Is that correct? Abijah? A-B-I-J-A-H. That's how you pronounce it. Well,
maybe Abijah sounds a
Abijah,
that rolls off the tongue a little better, but I'm not sure.
So Abijah division served from June 13th to June 19th. So because of that, the 6 month would actually push the date further in terms of the pregnancy, since it was only the 6 month period when that happened, mind you. So
I've heard that. It's an interesting theory, but we still don't know for sure.
Exactly, yeah. Only other thing I did want to mention is that, again, what you just said about the Roman conversion situation, if anything, Christian practice has redeemed the date, and therefore giving a new meaning of full praise to our Savior.
Basically. Now, there are other interesting things. You know, Hanukkah is celebrated around this time of the year,
it is.
Hanukkah was actually on December the 25th,
mm-hmm.
and that we do know. There's no evidence that the Hanukkah story was used to calculate the birth of Christ, but I find it very interesting that Hanukkah is on December the 25th.
Not to mention, I still get jealous that they get 8 presents per night, and then I only get that one present on that one night.
Have you ever seen the Saturday Night Live skit with John Lovitz playing Hanukkah Harry?
No, I have not.
Who brings presents to the Jewish boys and girls, and he goes around on a sleigh with 3 donkeys, Moshe, Herschel, and Shlomo. You got to look that up on YouTube.
Is it just as good as the
extra it's scene hilarious, but the kids are going, hey, wait, we're always so jealous of Rachel and Josh down the block because they get 8 presents, but maybe these are the kinds of presents they're getting. And he comes, they go, socks? He goes, 8 pair. Can you believe he brought her 1 pair of socks for each of the 8? And Tommy, for you, some slacks. They're a little big, but you'll grow into them. Hilarious.
I'll have to look that one up. They don't make those kind of skits anymore.
Oh, of course not. It's horrible now, but it was once a hilarious show.
Well, we're going to take another commercial break. This time, we're going to, on our next segment, we're going to focus on the 3 wise men coming up.
So. Ah. Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church.
Well, when we talked about the 3 wise men going out, I was thinking, I hope Brendan plays the wise men song. And of course he did.
Oh,
Brendan wouldn't forget to do something like that.
I am a professional here on the Bob
Siegel
Show.
He's an expert. He's right on top of it.
So, like we said earlier, I want to talk about the 3 wise men. Specifically, what does the Bible say about them? Because we don't have that much information on them, it feels like.
Well, for one thing, it doesn't say 3 wise men.
It definitely
does not.
It
doesn't give the names.
No, Melchior, they say Magi.
Casper, they say Magi. There could have been a bunch of them. This mm-hmm. could have been 7 guys. These could have been 50 guys. It also doesn't say that they were kings. So a lot of that is tradition that was added in later.
Now, where was this tradition started from? Did you look up to see
what it was? In the 6th century, they started giving them names and narrowing it down. Some of the 6th century Christian writings.
Okay, but they wouldn't relate to the Bible per se.
Oh, they wouldn't be able to pull it out of the Bible, but sometimes they'll go through other traditions. And
thus, it's in our media.
Yeah, sometimes they pull these things out of thin air, but they get into the vernacular.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I do want to mention is that one of the things that I thought of traditionally is that it only took them a couple days to even get there in the first place. But no, these guys could have traveled months, even years.
Well, they were coming from Persia, which is what we would today call Iran. And the Magi were very well known. They were like counselors, and they were extremely educated people. They were people that were trusted, and the people that were kings put their faith in the Magi quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been familiar, by the way, when Persia conquered Babylon, we would have ended up having Magi in Babylon as well, and they could have become very familiar with Daniel and Daniel's writings. And Daniel, in the 9th chapter, gave a calculation of when the Messiah was going to be born. So they were looking around the right time.
Right.
Well, actually, Daniel gave the calculation of when he would ride into Jerusalem as an adult, but they were calculating backwards to say, well, then he would be born in this general time frame.
Right. And one of the other interesting things is, again, they were even listening to the fact of you got to follow the star of
David. Yeah, there's a prophecy given in the laws of Moses about a star. Yes.
Yes. And they actually followed suit on that. And again, everything kind of coincided with every single point that was made, and they were able to show up to that. Now, again, there is some things about whether they actually did show up there in the first place. One of the things I did read online saying that they actually didn't show up to the actual manger itself.
Yeah, I love having the three wise men in my manger scene. I love having three of them, and I love the crowns on their heads. I love all the traditions, but let's be clear, that's all it is, tradition.
Yes.
As you know, there's a whole Christmas carol,
yes,
which drives me nuts because it's way too long, called the 12 Days of Christmas, and I feel like 12 days are over by the time I'm done singing it. But that was from a tradition that the wise men arrived 12 days later. They could have arrived up to 2 years later, because King Herod, when his wise men and Bible sages went through the scriptures to find out the time the Messiah would be born, they calculated that the baby could be anywhere up to 2 years old now. But they said 2 years old and younger, which meant they weren't sure. But what's very interesting, you get back again to the difference between Matthew and Luke. Now in Luke, Jesus is born in a stable, in a manger, just like we always traditionally say. And yes, shepherds came, and yes, angels announced it. But when the wise men visited him, Mary and Joseph, they did eventually return to their home of Nazareth. Apparently they lived in Bethlehem for a while because they were living in a house.
Right.
The Magi came to a house, not a stable. So they might have even come 2 years later.
Now,
it could have been that long afterwards.
I could be wrong here, but I think they worded it as a temple along with a lot of translations and all that. So it is an actual house that they actually lived in.
Yeah, it just says a house. Temple would have been a much different word.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. Either way, yeah. So the whole manger scene is actually just, again, based on tradition. They would have actually shown up at their house and gave them their gifts.
Yeah. And there's two different Greek words. Oikos is house, and then hieron is the word for temple. And these, of course, were written in Greek, even though we're talking about the Hebrew culture.
I could have sworn I read on there that there was a translation that said temple, but they fixed it to home or house at that point.
Sometimes people will make that kind of speculation. They go, oh, it was different here, but somebody corrupted it.
Nevertheless, the whole point of it is that it's very quite interesting to me that, again, tradition.
Nobody lived in the temple.
No, of course not, no.
Even the high priest didn't live inside the temple.
Again, one of the cool things, again, is that the Magi were men who, A, read and believed God's word, B, sought Jesus, C, recognized the worth of Christ, D, humbled themselves to worship Jesus, and E, obeyed God rather than man. That was amazing.
And some people get thrown with the word astrologers because the Bible condemns astrology. But in those days, an astrologer and an astronomer were a little closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, even if these guys did believe in astrology, which would have been wrong, that doesn't mean God couldn't have used them.
No, of course not.
Or give them some revelation about Jesus, because God can work through that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Again, we talked about it even the last time. I mean, God can convert so many people in so many societies.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, coming up, one of my favorite Christmas tunes has to relate to the birth of Jesus. And I wanted to know if he's actually any shape, wave, or form related to the Bible. Folks, you'll have to wait and find out what I'm talking about when we come back.
The much-anticipated sequel to The Dangerous Christmas Ornament is finally here, Inside the Castle in the Glass. Mike Owen is now in high school enjoying his new girlfriend and his new popularity. But life gets interrupted when a series of mishaps transfer him and his friends into a whole new world, the very world his mysterious Christmas ornament originated from. Inside the Castle in the Glass. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. At SDCC, you'll find a number of dynamic degree and certificate programs, including business, aviation, kinesiology, education, psychology, ministry, and more. Our curriculum blends academic excellence with a Christian worldview, ensuring you graduate ready to make a meaningful impact. Your journey starts here. Learn more at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Begin your journey.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Based on what you guys just heard, one of my favorite Christmas songs there, The Little Drummer Boy. As you know, that song is related to the birth of Jesus in terms of the subject matter. However, upon reading the Bible for Luke and Matthew, I don't see any reference to the Little Drummer Boy. Is he part of the Bible at all, or is
Brendan,
this
I looked
history?
Long and hard and I didn't see any sign of that kid banging the drum.
Dang,
just
it.
Not there.
I get it. There's a lot of historical fiction based on
now I
things.
Have to say this,
okay,
and I'm
ahead.
Saying this with kindness.
Okay,
you and I usually agree on movies and the arts and
yeah.
music. I think your taste in music I agree with probably as much as 95%. This Little Drummer Boy is one of my least favorite characters.
Oh,
I
man.
Just can't stand it. Now, I first heard it before I was a Christian.
Okay.
But I'm not sure I would have liked it any better if I'd heard it after I had already been a Christian. However, music is just a matter of taste.
Yes.
So what do I know?
So for just the music side, before I get more into details about Little Drummer Boy and possible Bible relations, because I do have...
Oh, we're going to stretch that. A point and say it may
really,
possibly be there?
Again, it's such a stretch on these
You'll
things.
You'll have to
so.
Take two Hebrew letters and look in between them somewhere.
So first off, is it the rumpa-pum-pum part that annoys you so much of the
I
song?
I think or? It's one story I can point to. My favorite sitcom growing up was The Dick Van Dyke Show.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever watched
of
that,
course,
but it was hilarious.
Yeah, yes, yes.
And they used to do this annual Christmas special where, remember, they were writing for the Alan Brady Show and they were letting all the writers perform and doing Christmas songs and Christmas skits. And it was a great show. But then their little kid, Richie, got up there with this deadpan, placid face and monotone voice. And he's like, smile at me. That might have killed the whole song for me right there.
Okay, so it's a previous memory.
Now,
possibly.
I like Mannheim Steamrollers' version of this. They are great at Jingle Bells is another one that I can't stand.
Mm-hmm.
Mannheim Steamrollers' version of Jingle Bells, you've never heard anything like it.
No, I love that version,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But then again, they put a lot of energy in.
Well, in their Jingle Bells case, they slowed it down and
yes.
played a very mellow version of it. So Mannheim Steamrollers can work miracles, even with some of the songs I don't like.
There you go. Okay, so now let me try to defend a little
bit
here.
Oh, this
ought
to be good.
All right.
This ought to be good.
So as we know, there's different versions of the story being told. For example, one of the side of the story is that shepherds came in. Shepherds would probably bring in their family members for that point. Therefore, possibly one of the shepherd's sons could have been this little drummer boy.
So they think this is the king of Israel that's been born. They're going to let their kid go in there and bang a drum?
Now that's the point I was going to make, too. Now, obviously.
Junior, put it away!
They said that visitors that were visiting the stable that night possibly would have had required silence because, again, who would want to wake up a sleeping infant with a banging drum inside there for sure? Yes, I understand that point. So, but there is a stretch that you could possibly say that the boy is one of the sons of the shepherds for sure.
Is it possible that some kid went in there and banged the drum? Anything's possible.
It is. But I will agree, it's more probably historical fiction, like The Road.
I wouldn't stake my salvation on it.
That's for sure. Still, I will defend this song.
Well, you know what? Since you like this, I'm going to throw you a bone.
Okay.
Did you ever watch The Chosen, the series The Chosen?
Yes.
And do you like it?
I do like it, yes.
There's a new animated version. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's called The Chosen Adventures, with the same voices of Jesus and his disciples, but they key in on Jesus' interaction with kids. It's animated.
Okay.
And they have animated animals that talk.
Oh, no.
But it's something that kids would like. But since you're loving this little drummer boy song, I thought maybe the kid at heart in you might like that series.
I know they recently did another movie called The Star, specifically. It's called
In a House. Oh, I saw that. Yeah. I saw one. I love The Chosen. I'm not going to get into this new animated kids thing, but I saw one episode because my daughter was telling me that she thinks all of our grandkids would like it. Watching it from that point of view, I thought it was very kids appropriate.
Right. And again, I do like the TV special, The Little Drummer Boy, too. I think it is very, very tasty.
I'm getting so sentimental with Christmas the older I get that I like everything. I like the Rudolph special.
You can't hate the Rudolph special.
Even
some
of the songs that I haven't liked since they remind me of Christmas time, they're starting to grow on me, and who knows, maybe in 15, 20, 30, 40 years, the same will happen with The Little Drummer Boy.
There's only one bad thing Rankin Bass has ever done, and that was the Lord of the Rings TV special. That was horrendous. I don't know what.
There was a Lord of the Rings TV special?
With Rankin Bass behind it, yes, and it was horrendous.
This is long before they made the movies?
Correct. Oh. This was actually just after, what's his name?
I know there was another theatrical release of the Lord of the Rings that was all animated years ago.
Correct, yeah.
Are you referring back to that?
Yeah, that one, a few years after that, they wanted to make a sequel.
Oh, they did. They did an animated Return of the King.
Correct, yeah, and it was just horrific. And Rankin Bass was behind. I was like, oh, no, not my favorite.
The Peter Jackson version is the version.
Oh, no, I will agree on that point. Yes. But there are a few things I do like about the animated one versus, but it's very few and far between.
Animated one, the one in the theaters, had a beautiful song when Gandalf died. Mm-hmm. I'll say that.
And I feel like with certain emotions in that animated one, it was a lot more subtle or a lot more you could let the viewer bring it in versus having the actor moan.
Plus, director was making the kind of movie you were able to make in those days.
True.
We've done so much since then with CGI that he didn't have available.
Exactly.
And no studio in those days would have had the patience for three movies, 3 years apart, hours each. So.
Well, thank you, Bob, so much for this
time. It's always a pleasure. I love it when we do these Christmas shows together.
It's very fun.